a dark blue Chevrolet. Reacher stopped. The other guy stopped. Chapter 32. Nobody knows how long it takes for thoughts to form. People talk about electrical impulses racing through nerves at a substantial fraction of the speed of light, but that's mere transmission. That's mail delivery. The letter is written in the brain, sparked to life by some sudden, damp chemical reaction, two compounds arcing across synapses and reacting like lead and acid in an automobile battery. But instead of sending 12 dumb volts to a turn signal, the brain floods the body with all kinds of subtle adjustments all at once, because thoughts don't necessarily happen one at a time. They come in starbursts and waterfalls and explosions, and they race away on parallel tracks, jostling, competing, fighting for supremacy. Reacher saw the dark blue Chevrolet and instantly linked it through Vincent's testimony back at the motel to the two men he had seen from Dorothy Coe's barn, while simultaneously critiquing the connection, in that Chevrolets were very common cars, and dark blue was a very common color, while simultaneously recalling the two matched Iranians and the two matched Arabs he had seen, and asking himself whether the rendezvous of two separate pairs of strange men in winter in a Nebraska hotel could be just a coincidence, and if indeed it wasn't, whether it might then reasonably imply the presence of a third pair of men, which might or might not be the two tough guys from Dorothy's farm. However inexplicable those six men's association might be, however mysterious their purpose, while simultaneously watching the man in front of him, dropping his car key and moving his arm and putting his hand in his coat pocket, while simultaneously realizing that the guys he had seen on Dorothy's farm had not been staying at Vincent's motel, and that there was nowhere else to stay except right there, 60 miles south at the Marriott, which meant that the Chevrolet was likely theirs, at least within the bounds of reasonable possibility, which meant that the Iranian with the moving arm was likely connected with them in some way, which made the guy an enemy, although Reacher had no idea how or why, while simultaneously knowing that likely didn't mean shit in terms of civilian jurisprudence, while simultaneously recalling years of hard-won experience that told him men like this Iranian went for their pockets in dark parking lots for one of only four reasons. Either to pull out a cell phone to call for help, or to pull out a wallet, or a passport, or an ID to prove their innocence or their authority, or to pull out a knife, or to pull out a gun. Reacher knew all that, while also knowing that violent reaction ahead of the first two reasons would be inexcusable, but that violent reaction ahead of the latter two reasons would be the only way to save his life. Starbursts and waterfalls and explosions of thoughts, all jostling and competing and fighting for supremacy. Better safe than sorry. Reacher reacted. He twisted from the waist in a violent spasm and started a low sidearm punch aimed at the center of the Iranian's chest. Chemical reaction in his brain, instantaneous transmission of the impulse, chemical reaction in every muscle system from his left foot to his right fist. Total elapsed time, a small fraction of a second. Total distance to target, less than a yard. Total time to target, another small fraction of a second. Which was good to know right then, because the guy's hand was all the way in his pocket by that point, his own nervous system reacting just as fast as Reacher's, his elbow jerking up and back and trying to free whatever the hell it was he wanted, be it a knife or a gun or a phone or a driver's license or a passport or a government ID or a perfectly innocent letter from the University of Tehran proving he was a world expert on plant genetics and an honored guest in Nebraska just days away from increasing local profits 100-fold and eliminating world hunger at one fell swoop. But right or wrong, Reacher's fist was homing in regardless, and the guy's eyes were going wide and panicked in the gloom, and his arm was jerking harder, and the brown skin and the black hair on the back of his moving hand was showing above the hem of his pocket, and then came his knuckles, all five of them bunched and knotted because his fingers were clamping hard around something big and black. Then Reacher's blow landed. 250 pounds of moving mass. A huge fist. A huge impact. The zipper of the guy's coat driving backward into his breastbone. His breastbone driving backward into his chest cavity. The natural elasticity of his rib cage letting it yield whole inches. The resulting violent compression driving the air from his lungs. The hydrostatic shock driving blood back into his heart, his head snapping forward like a crash test dummy, his shoulders driving backward, his weight coming up off the ground, his head whipping backward again and hitting a plate glass window behind him with a dull boom like a kettle drum, his arms and legs and torso all going down like a rag doll, his body falling, sprawling, the hard polycarbonate click and clatter of something black skittering away on the ground, Reacher tracking it all the way in the corner of his eye. Not a wallet, not a phone, not a knife, but a Glock 17 semi-automatic pistol, all dark and boxy and wicked. It ended up 6 or 8 feet away from the guy, completely out of his reach. Safe, not retrievable, partly because of the distance itself and partly because the guy was down and he wasn't moving at all. In fact, he was looking like he might never move again. Something Reacher had heard about, but never actually seen. His army medic friends had called it commotio cordis, their name for low-energy trauma to the chest wall. Low-energy only in the sense that the damage wasn't done by a car wreck or a shotgun blast, but by a line drive in baseball, or a football collision, or a punch in a fight or a bad fall onto a blunt object. Gruesome research on laboratory animals proved it was all about luck and timing. Electrocardiograms showed waveforms associated with the beating of the heart, one of which was called the T-wave, and the experiments showed that if the blow landed when the T-wave was between 15 and 30 milliseconds short of its peak, then lethal cardiac dysrhythmias could occur, stopping the heart just like a regular heart attack. And in a high-stress environment, like a confrontation in a parking lot, a guy's heart was pounding away much harder than normal, and therefore it was bringing those T-wave peaks around much faster than usual, as many as 2 or possibly 3 times a second, thereby dramatically increasing the odds that the luck and the timing would be bad, not good.